I don't want to put any restrictions whatsoever on what we do now musically. I mean, I want the freedom to just explore whatever areas I can. And I don't think we've even begun to get wild with it yet. You know, we're still in the structures of rock and roll songs. Into the great wide open. It still fascinates me that you can pick up the guitar and sit for a few hours and find some tune that you never knew, you know, that you didn't know existed. I was making some noise. I was a working boy. Up at the top of a voice saying, look at me, mama, I'm making some noise. Hi, this is Tom Petty. Welcome back into the Great Wide Open.
July 1991 found Tom Petty's stock back on top. He had practically stumbled into becoming a member of a loose all-star recording fraternity called the Traveling Wilburys while recording Petty's first ever solo album in 1988. The Traveling Wilburys album, featuring superstars ex-Beatle George Harrison, Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, former ELO leader Jeff Lynne, and Tom Petty, became a huge hit, as did Petty's solo album, Full Moon Fever, which followed in 1989. So, for his next album with the Heartbreakers called Into the Great Wide Open, I thought we'd better sit down with Tom Petty in the studio.
It's hard to keep up with you. You do so much stuff. It
never a dull moment.
You wouldn't bring this up, so I'm going to. You're too modest, but just recap some of the acclaim or awards, if you will, that you garnered with Full Moon Fever, for instance. American Music Award?
Yeah, we did that. We didn't win a Grammy. We got a lot of nominations. But
many nominations.
But the Wilburys did. And so I'm one of the first people to ever beat myself at the Grammys. And you know, I mean, we got lots of airplay awards and things like that. It was very gratifying, very humbling and gratifying. Thank you.
It was a 1989 album of the year in virtually every industry poll, year-end poll.
Yeah.
Period.
I'm told we were the first to ever have three number one rock tracks on Billboard, which was flattering. So, yeah, gosh, you know, thanks to everybody for that one.
Who was the most surprised?
Me, probably, more than anybody.
When you put together that album,
yeah,
Mike Campbell's Garage, what kind of goal or hopes or what did you think it was going
to
do?
I was just trying to make a record that I liked, and I was on my own for the first time, and we didn't have much time to do it in because I'd met Jeff Lynne, and we realized that we had something good going on. And Jeff had limited time before he had to go back to England, so we were just really rushing through, you know, and we got it done in two stages, one of about 3 months, and then stopped and did the Wilburys' first record and then finished it up after that. But it was just a fun album. It was an enjoyable album. You know, it was just meant to be entertaining. I wasn't trying to make a bold statement with it or anything. I was just trying to make an entertaining record, you know.
But entertaining for who as well?
Well, for me, mainly. And that's the only way I can work. I can't. Trying to make them for somebody else is hard, you know. You just better make them for yourself and hope that you like it. And then if somebody else digs it, that's even better. I think it's just a product of time, really. I mean, you can get lots of good advice, but it takes you years to learn to use it. So I've come to realize that, and when that's a hard one, you know, to please yourself is much harder than to please somebody else. So pleasing yourself is the trick, and if you like them, then it's much easier to stand behind them, you know.
Well, I started out down a dirty road, started out all alone, and the sun went down as across the hill, and the town lit up, the world got still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Well, the good old days may not return, and the rocks might melt, and the seed may burn. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Say life will beat you down and break your heart, steal your crown. So I've started out for God knows where. I guess I'll know when I get there. Fly around the clouds, but what goes up must come down. Hardest thing. I'm learning to fly around the clouds, but what goes up must come down. I'm learning to fly. I'm learning.
It's more about overcoming obstacles, and sometimes you just got to fly to get over some of the things in your way, you know. It's very hard to fly, you know. You're told to fly all the time over these problems, but you don't have wings. The idea came to me. I was watching television and I saw a pilot being interviewed about flying and how you learn to pilot an airplane, and they asked him what the most difficult thing was, and he said coming down. And I thought that's pretty good philosophy there. So I managed to get a whole song out of that. Sometimes a record like Learning to Fly, say, it's a very simple track, but it's very the sound. Creating that sound isn't such a simple thing. You have to intricately layer it with textures of guitars to sound the way it does, and keyboards. We really like, you know, textures in the sound. That's something that I find a lot in Brian Wilson's records, which, you know, those are some of my favorite records that I still keep coming back to, are those, you know, mid to late 60s Beach Boy records. that are just brilliant in the way that they're orchestrated, and just the choice of instruments, the combination of instruments. And I think those are all, you know, those kind of records are the ones that we all usually agree on. Oh, wow, that's really a good piece of work there. But the most important thing is the song and the tune. You know, if you got a song and a tune, there's an infinite number of ways to arrange it and orchestrate it. So it's, we all just look for a melody, mostly like a song that, you know, seems to have something strong about it, even if it's just at the piano or strumming it down to them on the guitar. The sort of the unwritten rule is that it has to work in that situation. And then we'll begin figuring out how we're going to play it.
When the time gets right, I'm going to pick you up and take you far away from trouble, my love, under a big old sky. Something left for us to believe. Oh, I await the day good fortune comes our way, and we ride down the King's Highway.
Just to comment on the way things are, you know, there's so many guns around. It's hard to hold your head up when you know, high school students are shot leaving school. The guys I hate most in this society, and God knows there's a lot of them to hate right now, you know, running the government and the world in general. But I mean, the worst guys, I mean, the last guys we need are these gangbangers. You know, if you live in LA like I do, you get real used to it. On the news every night, somebody rode by and shot somebody out of their car window. And it's usually a small child or a grandma putting her kid to bed gets the bullet through the window, you know, from these cowboys in the, you know, in the gangs or whatever they are. But I mean, I was trying to think, we were talking yesterday, a friend of mine and me, about just what mentality brings about firing a gun at random out of your car, you know, and I think it's just like that jail mentality of my life has no meaning. you know, my life means nothing, so I'll just fire a gun wherever I want, you know, which is about as far as you can go, as far as you can sink, you know. And I think having to live in a world like that is just, that's probably where that line came from, you know. It's all about trying to just be proud of yourself and your community and where you live, and then you've got people firing guns at random, not at the enemy or not for any reason, not to prove anything, just firing at random. You know, I mean, I think that's a real good example of the times of where we're at.
If your life means nothing, then it's hard to respect the sanctity of someone else's life.
Yeah, it's that psychopathic thing of no guilt, no remorse, you know. And that's a result of just insensitivity. You know, your skin gets eventually so thick that because you've been deprived of everything, then you get like that, I suppose, you know. But you have to struggle not to get like that.
And then how about near the very, also in the end of the second stanza, don't want to end up?
I don't end up in a room all alone. And there's a don't end up someone I don't even know. And that's, you know, fairly self-explanatory. You know, none of us want to end up alone. It's very easy to go through life saying, you know, I'm the loner or I'm the, but really, I don't think anybody wants to come out of this crazy life all alone. And that's all I meant by that. And you don't, you have to be careful that you can become somebody that even you don't recognize, you know. You're just the eternal struggle to be yourself. It's very hard to just be yourself, you know, all the time.
Is it even harder in the business side of your, I mean, you know.
I don't know.
In the entertainment business?
I hear that it is. I think it's hard whatever business you're in, really? to just be true to what you believe all the time. It's a thing that a lot of people say, and boy, it's a full-time job to pull that off, you know. Boy, it's a really serious record, isn't it?
No, I guess I'm fixating.
What's he talking about?
Maybe I'm,
he was such a nice boy.
Eddie waited till he finished high school. He went to Hollywood, got a tattoo. He met a girl out there with a tattoo too. The future was wide open. They'd moved into a place they both could afford. He found a nightclub he could work at the door. She had a guitar and she taught him some chords. The sky was the limit. Into the great wide open, under them skies of blue. Said it always played from the heart. He got an agent and a roadie named Bart. They made a record and it went in the charts. The sky was the limit. His leather jacket had chains that would jingle. They both met movie stars, partied and mingled.
Their A&R man said, I don't hear a single. The future was wide open. Into the great wide open, under them skies of blue, out in the great wide open, a rebel without a clue. Into the
title song to Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers 1991 multi-million seller Into the Great Wide Open. Next, Tom Petty proves that fame cannot insulate anyone from the big issues of our time and how Petty is concerned about the very future of rock and roll. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Tom Petty of the Heartbreakers, Into the Great Wide Open.
Hi, this is Tom Petty. Welcome back into the Great Wide Open. That's right, into the Great Wide Open. And now here's Redbeard.
The dark of the sun, that you recognize that this life, plenty of questions, and it almost seems like on the dark of the sun, you're wondering aloud if maybe the answers are going to be revealed in the next one.
Yeah, well, maybe, yeah. It's just kind of one of those songs about, security, I suppose, peace of mind. Probably about peace of mind, you know, like as you watch the world fall apart, what is there, what am I guaranteed, you know, which is basically nothing, you know, but all I can strive for is peace of mind, you know, and that's really what that song's about. It's kind of a love song, really. It's just about true peace of mind.
Be more aware of the transitional nature of life, maybe a little more aware of your own mortality at this point in your life?
Well, when you hit 40, you have all these thoughts, you know.
It says right there in the handbook.
I'll probably look 40. Back at this as some sort of midlife crisis album, you know. And go, God, I should have just lightened up. But I should have had a drink and forgot about. But I suppose I'm working a lot of things out, you know. It's very hard, you know. Living your life as we have in tour buses and airplanes for all this time. You say, I think that when I turned 40, I kind of did, get, as most people do, just get a little reflective about, well, where have we been and where are we going? And you do kind of realize that, you know, gee, you know, 20 more and I'm out of here, you know.
If you're lucky. If you're a statistic.
So you gotta, you do take stock of that. You do take stock of that, and I think it creeps into your songwriting, probably. I don't think all these grand thoughts while I'm writing the songs. I'm hit with some inspiration of some kind, and I'm just trying to finish it off and exercise it from my system. You know, just get, let's, I gotta get this one done, and you do your best, and then later on, you can, it's easy to play them and have all sorts of grand thoughts about what was on your mind. But I think really that's just a song about guarantees and peace of mind and not being afraid.
In the dark of the sun, will you save me a place? Give me hope, give me comfort. Get me to a better place. I saw you sail across a river underneath Orion's sword.
In your eyes there was a freedom I had never known before. Hey, yeah, yeah. In the dark of the sun we will stand together. Yeah, we will stand as one. In the dark of the sun. Yeah, I'll pass my days wondering why. Will I sail into the heavens, constellations and eyes? Hey, yeah, yeah. In the dark of the sun together. Yeah, we will stand as one. Hey, yeah, yeah. In the dark of the sun we will stand together. Yeah, we will stand as one. Oh, in the dark of the sun. In the dark of the sun. Oh, in the dark of the sun.
As I wrote this album, we went to war and the war came, and there was a few anxious moments there during the war, you know, where you feel really vulnerable to people that are running the planet, you know, that these people that have been put in the position of running the planet. Can those people just, you know, blow me up? Yes, they can.
That's the answer.
And it becomes very obvious. And it was a very hard and painful thing for me to go through, the war was. I mean, I had extremely mixed emotions about the war, and I never felt good about it the whole time it was going on. And, of course, I support the troops, you sweet things. But I felt terrible about the fact that we were so... in this day and age that we're still barbaric enough to roll out and kill thousands of people.
As a foreign policy, as a way of...
As anything.
Supposedly just, settling a difference.
I just still think that's barbaric. And I think that Dark of the Sun was one written during that period of the war. And when I'd watch the oil fires in Kuwait, you know, that's where I sort of had the image of the dark of the sun. Write a song about that, you know, imagining that you're, if it had been, Indianapolis where the oil fires were burning, and or Cincinnati or Los Angeles, you know, it would hit us in a different way than if it's Kuwait on CNN. But you have to realize that those people can also blow up your town, you know, So vote and be aware of these people.
Did you set out to write differently for these last two records?
No. I think I just, you turn into different people every year. The time goes by and you change, you know. I don't think I don't think we've mellowed necessarily as I've just tried to take a different approach with... You get tired of being angry and cocky, you know, though there's a lot to be said for being angry and cocky.
At times.
But I think in these times, you just need honesty more than anything else. It's very refreshing.
And a rare commodity these days.
Yeah, and I'm thinking at this point in rock, radio, and in records and all that, all of those guys are cocky and angry, you know, which tends to make me go the other way because I'm so tired of it that it's become so phony and pretentious, you know, singing songs about how this woman's done you wrong over and over again. It's unless you gotta believe it or it's just downright tedious, you know. I mean, I think you'll find the people that you admire most are the singers that you believe, that you tend to believe what they're singing. Well, so what's the easiest way to get to that? Tell the truth, you know, and that's the quickest way to land on honesty. And so you just try to, as hard as you can, to tell the truth without it becoming too painful for you or the audience. So that's where I've come, you know, that's where I've landed. I wouldn't write Refugee now. I was only, you know, a kid in my 20s when I did that. I don't feel that way necessarily anymore. So it's much easier for me to write, you know, a song like Learning to Fly now, because they're just very honest songs and straightforward songs. And I don't think that kindness, I don't know what word I'm looking, I think maybe kindness, you know, is something that's not in a lot of songs in pop music at the moment, in rock music. We've taken on a very macho stance, you know, which alarms me a little bit.
Might not,
you know,
be really healthy.
And it's the same thing, you know, like, you know, someone has to just tell the truth. Because you can't be like that all the time.
No one's totally invulnerable.
Yeah, well, they're not. And you, a little vulnerability, yeah, will go a long way.
They fell down, the air got cold, I walked out in the street. Daydreamed for a mile or two, staring at my feet. Like a working boy, out of luck, falling through the cracks. And I rolled in, I turned back home, a hard wind at my back. I'm out in the cold, body and soul. There's nowhere to go. I'm out in the cold. When I woke up, my brain was stunned. I could not come around. I reached out to grab my keys and tumbled to the ground. Thought of you, starry eyed. I wonder where we stand. Did I just fall from your arms down into your hands? I'm out in the cold, body and soul. There's nowhere to go. I'm out in the cold.
Standing in a doorway. In my pocket.
I'm out in the cold, body and soul. With nowhere to go. I'm out in the cold. I'm
Out in the Cold by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers has caused more than a few inadvertent speeding tickets since it debuted in July 1991 on Into the Great Wide Open. Still to come, Tom Petty reminds us all that the greed that caused the Great Recession was actually a sequel to a similar financial failure. Plus, Tom sings the praises of his incredible band, the Heartbreakers. You can follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online anytime at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Tom Petty of the Heartbreakers in the studio Into the Great Wide Open.
Hi, this is Tom Petty. Welcome back into the Great Wide Open. That's right, Into the Great Wide Open. And now here's Redbeard.
A 40-weight line in a 20-weight pop melody. There is a chilling line lurking in For All the Wrong Reasons. It's a melodic little warm toe tapper, the song. But in the beginning, quote, a big old house goes up for sale. And in the end, what's being sold out?
Yeah, well, that's a song about, it is sort of about selling out for all the wrong reasons, you know. That's the sort of song about, that we've all been through that, you know, in the late 80s into the 90s. There's been this realization that perhaps money was more important to some people than it should have been, obviously. There's this sort of a little greed trilogy I did there between All or Nothing, All the Wrong Reasons, and Too Good to Be True is all about, all follows in a row about, you know, just what are you striving for, you know, if you know better, you should always listen to yourself, to what you believe, I think, in your heart about things like borrowing huge sums of money that you can't pay back, and, you know, I guess it's about sort of the yuppie thing, and the big business, you know. I'm so tired of big business. I've watched big business has sort of raped the culture, what there was of the culture of America. You know, it's just raping it. And now it's not even American big business. You've got the whole world's big business in here. And it's a very unsympathetic thing to our culture and environment and our state of mind. And if it's all about, all that you wind up with is a big house and a nice color TV, it's just not worth it. You know, there was a time when people drew a line at some point. They drew the line there, you know, and said, well, I know, but that I don't believe in that.
At
you know?
What price?
Yeah. And I think we all fell victim to sort of the carrot and the donkey thing of thinking that there's more to get the more money you make. But there should be a point at where you draw the line and say, well, yeah, I can make some money doing that, but will I feel good about it? No, you know. So I just use some of those images of, you know, big houses going up for sale and now what? You know, I try to assume characters, you know, in these songs. And they're little stories about things just unexpectedly going wrong, and the house goes up for sale, and then people go up for sale, and that sort of thing. And he becomes his own invention, you know. So really, whatever he's become isn't what he should have been.
Didn't you explore a similar theme when you co-wrote with Roger McGuinn on King of the Hill?
Yeah, well, I've only got one theme, really. But
I didn't mean
God, I've taken it a long way, yeah. Redbeard.
Much money, I was staying out late. I go down at nighttime, play music in the bars, take my breaks out underneath the stars. I was making some noise, I was a working boy, up at the top of a voice saying, look at me, mama, I'm making some noise. We'll be right back.
to rock the boat. I had to shake the tree to see what fall down on me. I thought maybe I could make it if I never give in. I've been down before, I ain't going down again. I'm making some noise, I've been a worried boy. I'm at the top of my voice saying, look at me, mama, I'm making some noise. Across the canyon, a guitar plays through an amplifier on a long delay. It was an old melody, I recognized the song. I had an amplifier too, so I played along. I'm making some noise, I'm still a working boy. At the top of a voice saying, look at me, mama, I'm making some noise. I'm making some noise. I've been a long gone boy. At the top of a voice saying, look at me, mama, I'm making some noise.
You know, that's the most autobiographical song on the album. And when you get near autobiography, you can get very nervous and sensitive about what you're putting in and want to change it a little bit just so it's not too revealing. And that's the benefit of having a good producer in the room is he doesn't care if it's too sensitive for you because he takes the position of the listener and argues with the artist that, no, you know, that's what you wrote and that's the way it should go out. So, I think he was probably right.
Was there ever a time when the Heartbreakers were threatened with breaking up?
But, yeah, every 2 or 3 hours. What day is it?
What day is it?
They could go at any time, Redbeard.
The roller coaster ride that has been your career since coming out west.
Yeah.
So was there seriously, you know, ever a time when the band itself was in jeopardy, or were there several times when it just, I mean, you had legal problems, you had record companies folding out from under you, you had people trying to grab your master, legally tried to take your master tapes, you had lawsuits, you had,
yeah,
and you had hit songs and hit albums and big tours. And,
well, none of that ever tried. I mean, those bad times, I think we tended to circle our wagons more, you know. We never were threatened with breaking up, quite the opposite when we were in those confrontations you mentioned. But, you know, it's the other times when you have to watch it, when you have long period of inactivity or, you know, just impatience, you know. But I think that we all, fortunately now, don't have the Heartbreakers as our sole means of expression, which has changed the complexion of the group quite a bit now. It's that isn't life or death for us now, so we can take it much more. We can approach it in a more frivolous manner and therefore make better music, I think, and enjoy it more. We're not strapped together year in and year out like we once were. So I think the only reason we don't break up is because A, we feel that we're getting better, and B, we realize how precious the thing is, to use a precious word, but it's hard, you know. We none of us are ever going to put together a group like that again. You know, you just can't.
It wasn't a manufactured band.
It's something, you know. These are people.
Not a showbiz band.
Just known each other their whole lives, and we know that we're not going to top that, and I think that keeps us together. And we are friends, believe it or not. We don't spend near as much time together as we used to, but we're all still friends and still close, you know. But when it comes down to playing, you know, if I have to think about going in front of people, in front of the public and playing, I couldn't imagine playing without them, you know. I couldn't imagine wanting to take the stage with another group necessarily, you know, because this is just such an excellent group.
That's probably the highest praise you can give them. Yeah. What you just said.
They are, you know, there are times when you forget that, well, you know, just because they're all crazy or you get crazy with them or whatever, but they're very talented, you know, and they're very reliable and instinctual with the music. You don't have to sit and talk a lot, or we don't really work a lot on music. We just play it, and that's a luxury that only comes with a group like that, you know, that's been together a long time and is good at reading my mind. And they're a very powerful group. I've played with a lot of people, but I've never had anyone really just kick me in the ass like that group, like the Heartbreakers. You know, they're a very powerful group when they get excited.
How has Full Moon Fever's success possibly redefined what a Heartbreakers song is or could be?
Could be anything. I mean, we don't really know what a Heartbreakers song is. We never have.
Yeah, but have you ever written a song earlier, as varied as Built to Last, but held it back from consideration because it didn't fit some preconceived idea of what you thought a Heartbreakers song was?
There was one, I remember giving it to Roseanne Cash, and she had a number one song with it called, it's called Never Be You, that I wrote years ago in the early 80s, that seemed just too sweet and sensitive for the group. And we gave it to Roseanne, and she did a great job with it. But at the time, it wouldn't have seemed right to us because we were playing a whole different style of music. But as we've gone on, I really, honestly, I think they could play anything that I brought them. And I hope that they would think so, too. I don't want to put any restrictions whatsoever on what we do now musically at all. I mean, I want the freedom to just explore whatever areas I can. And I don't think we've even begun to get wild with it yet. You know, we're still in the structures of rock and roll songs. But there's so much you can do. And that's the great thing about music, is that the more you do it, the more you find that you didn't know was there, you know, and it just keeps on coming for some reason. It still fascinates me that you can pick up the guitar and sit for a few hours and find some tune that you never knew, you know, that you didn't know existed. And that's the beauty of music. It's something you can always count on. You can count on it. There's so much in there. There's so much. And it is true that, you know, the longer you do it, the more you realize that there's just so little I've learned from it. But I love that about it. You know, I love that about, and I guess that's why I still have an interest in it. You know, unlike a lot of things that, you know, I've just come and go, or I burn out on them, or I'm interested in some subjects for a while, then I'm not. But, you know, each person has their particular calling, so to speak, and music was definitely mine. And I'm happy and fortunate that I knew that at a real early age, you know, because it takes a lot of people spend a lot of their life just trying to find whatever it is that is going to do that for them. And I was fortunate enough to know it at a very early age.
on an Indiana night. Well, she moved down here at the age of 18. She blew the boys away, it was more than they'd seen. I was introduced and we both started grooving. She said, I dig you, baby, but I got to keep moving.
One more time to kill the pain. I feel summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town up. Tired of going down, tired of myself, tired of this town. Oh my, my, oh hell yes. Honey, put on that party dress. Buy me a drink, sing me a song. Take me as I come, cause I can't stay long.
Last dance with Mary Jane. One more time to kill the pain. Tired of this town
Square. She's standing in her underwear, looking down from a hotel room. The nightfall will be coming soon. Oh my, my, oh hell yes. You got to put on that party dress. It was too cold to cry when I woke up alone. I hit my last number, I walked to the road.
Last dance with Mary Jane. One more time to kill the pain. Feel summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town again.
Mary Jane's Last Dance just missed making it onto Into the Great Wide Open. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Tom Petty. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.